This is Questioning Fashion with Ali and Joe.
Because there's more to fashion than shopping. We went on an excursion this week.
Yeah, we did.
It was really fun. We went to interview some very, very cool people. Gary Bigini and Sally Jackson.
Yes.
And I was excited because Gary Bigini was the first fashion show I ever went to at Fashion Week.
Yay!
Back in probably 2009 or something. I think I did not have a ticket and snuck in. But I told him that and he was like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, he's a man of the people.
Yeah, so that was really fun. We went to Sally's studio in Marrickville.
Join the dots.
And, we're in Marrickville right now, but if you know Marrickville, it's a big suburb and most of it's under a flight path.
Yes.
It's a working studio. I was just sort of recording the conversation while we were there. It's not amazing audio today.
It's not amazing audio, but it was a super exciting initiative that they're involved in that we talk about.
Yeah. Firstly, we talked to them about this workshop that we're doing that you'll hear about in a minute. And then we went to the workshop. And so we will see you after the interview to tell you how the workshop went.
Yeah.
When the Opera House said, can you make a fully sustainable costume workshop? It was more along the lines of, like, that sounds horrific as far as the scale of what that could be. But when we thought, all right, we can't just allow anyone to do anything. We have to keep some constraints around materials or around styles so that we're in a workshop and people achieve something and they walk away feeling a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah.
They walk away feeling like they've learned something new, even if it's the smallest thing, like adorning a pair of jeans with, you know, beautiful hand embellished design or understanding that, you know, if you cut fabric in a certain way, you can create fringing. These little tidbits will make the problem a lot more attainable or a lot more accessible.
They can do this at home as well. It doesn't have to always involve taking it somewhere to get it done for them. Like the techniques that we've been doing last year and this year, that anyone can do them. It's just educating them and letting them know, you know, if they have an old shirt, like how could they, instead of throwing it out, like how could they repurpose it into something new. Doesn't have to be something to wear. It could be a curtain or could be a bag or a pencil case. I don't know.
Totally.
And I'm assuming the way you present it is probably takes the fear out of it for a lot of people, because so many people, they're like, oh, I don't want to cut up my jeans because I'll ruin it. Or like, I don't want to do that because I'll ruin it or I'll stuff it up. Just being there to guide them through it shows them like, no, you'll be fine. Even how you just said, you can just cut up fabric. A lot of people literally don't know what will happen if they cut their fabric.
That's right.
Yeah. They think like, oh, but I have to know how to sew and hem it properly. It's like, a lot of fabrics you actually don't.
Yeah. We actually started the workshop last year with a demonstration where Ash, one of our technicians, put on the jeans. And the first thing we got out of the jeans was how to cut the jeans.
Chaps.
In particular, you can make a little workshop belt.
Like an apron.
Like an apron, which is exactly like a tool belt. And then from the leg pieces, we were then able to show them how to make the tote bag or the hat.
Yeah,
so
nice.
Essentially we started with jumping off the ledge, showing them that the fear is conquered straight away by attacking the pair of jeans, and then from those materials, what could be achieved in that time.
Yeah.
So all of it thought out in the sense that we wanted to dispel the myth, the fear, and then have people take something away. So scanning the QR codes meant that they had at least 8 samples to go away and try at home if they couldn't get it done in the time they were in the workshop. So yeah, there was a lot of trying to get the most out of our time with everybody.
And getting them.
Do you think that's what enjoyed the children's version so much, or the kids that were involved so much, because they have less fear? They kind of happy to jump in the deep end.
The kids are just so individual, aren't they? Yeah.
They're so inspiring. Like they're individually. They
had real personality.
Yeah,
they had real
freedom. They also had an independence as well. Their parents weren't. They were there to support, but they had their own ideas. It wasn't like, well, let's do this. They're like, just dive in and do what you want. And the parents were there to kind of support them, which was, I think, made it even more exciting for them to be a part of it.
I feel we've got a lot to learn from children. We did a whole episode on finding your inner child.
We also did an episode about like how no one knows how to sew anymore.
Yeah.
I know, because I learned as a child. And maybe that's the best time to learn because you've got higher levels of confidence but lower standards. You just start a project and you finish it and you go, that looks amazing. As an adult, they get frustrated that it doesn't look like something they could have bought from the shops.
My niece loved her bag, her little tote bag. She was showing everybody. And at the end of the day, there's such a sense of pride and accomplishment. And that was really what was so good.
But do the adults to see? Do you see that with the adults?
Well, adults do come along kind of hoping they'll walk away with a Garabagini unique garment. And yet we were telling them they had to cut them up. Yeah. So there was a lot of.
Some didn't really want to. They wanted
just wanted the jeans.
They just wanted the jeans. Slowly it works. Like they kind of pushed them and. Yeah,
a lot of shorts.
A lot of hot pants.
Because people were able to at least keep first, some of it.
Yeah.
And say, these are the ones, you know, the world pride.
Right.
Yeah. But it's good because those that came last year can now make a matching tote bag.
Yeah, are you getting repeat customers?
Yeah, I think, I mean, a few people that came last year and made little outfits to wear. And then, you know, they come back and make a matching tote bag.
That's so perfect.
Which is awesome. So.
Yeah, that really is awesome. I feel like it's partly because we've got this new slogan. It's like questioning fashion because it's more about, what is it?
Because there's more to fashion than shopping.
Yeah. The kind of people who come to your workshop, I imagine a lot of them would be people who do enjoy fashion and basically grown up to think that enjoying fashion means going shopping. But it's like you're teaching what actually fashion traditionally meant when everyone made their own stuff. My mum used to make her own dress every single week to go out that in the 50s to go out that Friday night. A new dress every week. Because we've offshored everything to faceless people and we've come so far from that era of making our own stuff, I feel like we've just got to like bring people back to that and realize that you can love fashion and be a fashion person. And I'm seeing it on TikTok that Gen Z are doing it. There's so much thrift flipping and so much amazing upcycling and
a lot of crocheting.
And do you feel like the people at the workshop
I think so, but also just showing there's other ways into fashion and making things.
Yes.
Everything doesn't have to be new, like new fabric, like going and buying a whole new fabric and making something. You're like just educating people a bit more about their choices.
Hit the nail on the head there with education.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time people are so overwhelmed, and if there is an opportunity to learn a way, a strategy, well, that's where I'm the most passionate and want to get people on board with just understanding that a simple pair of jeans can be so many other things. And this is how you do it. And one person attacking this one thing will then hopefully they'll share and show their amazing thing they created with their friend and show them that it's possible. And then that just catches on more than kind of putting it in a too hard basket or saying there's nothing we can do.
It's in the title though of your podcast. I mean, it's questioning fashion. So it's giving it's giving people a change in perception and they're seeing that it can be more than just what you wear. We want more people to return to these skills. We want to have people understand that when they're buying something new and made with so much love and creative integrity and thought, I wouldn't want to throw my money away. I want to purchase something with that consideration in it.
But then like with this upcycling, when you then put your own time and effort into your clothes, it's like they go up in value even more.
Yeah. People think that they have to throw their fast fashion away. When they come to our workshops, they're like, what sustainable labels should we buy from? It's like, why don't we look at your wardrobe first?
Yeah. Right. And I also love that when you're creating something original, you can't get it anywhere else.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
Each one of your garments, Gary, has that unique stamp on it. It is a one of a kind. And I think it's brave to step out of the norm and go, I'm going to create my own unique style, or I'm going to make something that is just uniquely telling my story. That's what we want more of, because that will be the disruptor in the big system. That's the fashion system that needs to hopefully change.
It's funny, depends what your algorithm is. When you think it's trending and you're really hopeful.
Yeah, we live in a bubble.
But we do live in a bubble.
But I don't mind that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice bubble, like, isn't it? Do you think anyone who comes to these workshops is from the other side of the algorithm? Do you think that you're converting anybody?
Well, I think something as conventional as the Opera House brings such a wide audience. Yeah. And that was really what was the best pull for Gary and I, because we are of a slow fashion minority.
Yeah.
and the Opera House really represents a majority,
yeah,
doesn't it? True. So it was a very different audience that mm-hmm. we would normally achieve mm-hmm. in our own circular network.
Yeah.
We had a lot of great feedback from people who just read their emails and go to their things because yeah. the newsletter from the Opera House tells them to.
They're a certain type of person that does
there
that
really
hate.
Is. There are people that like subscribe. They'd seen our photos and thought how vibrant and cute we looked, and they came along just curious. So definitely there's yeah. infiltration, but it's again, it's education, it's inspiration, it's really highlighting how unique and individual people can be.
Yeah. Do you let people know about the palette of 200 jeans?
Absolutely. So we did a slideshow presentation showing the starting point from the project of being invited to create an upcycling workshop, and that circular, whole circular production. We showed them inspiration of different other artists and people throughout history who have been recycling or repurposing clothes. I just want to nod to Ali's amazing earrings that she's wearing right now. I'm getting Elsa Schiaparelli vibes.
Definitely.
And Schiaparelli was a big influence for us.
Yes.
Because, you know, taking something that is considered surreal or unusual and then reinterpreting it is embedded in the work.
Yeah.
Of course, we want people to see full transparency of where the materials come from, how they're repurposed, how they can be disposed of. You know, we don't want to really incorporate anything that's terribly bad for the environment or problematic for the system. Circular speaking, we're kind of diverting all this waste from landfill and giving it a new life.
I just feel like a lot of designers probably do the whole like, I want to do reuse but sort of put it in the too hard basket, like it's actually not, because there's so much available.
It was actually Kit Willow who was the person who put us onto apparel.
Yeah, we went to this Christmas party thing and there were a bunch of designers there, and we were like, let's let people know what we're doing and see if we could like put it out there to get some support or help. And we told Kit what we were doing, and she recommended the apparel group in Melbourne that you know, source a lot of old stuff from suppliers, and and then Sal gave them a call the next that day. We're like on the ball with her
straight
then
away. Kit Willow can hand select her denim materials. I was like, surely they can give us light colored denim, which is what we need en masse. And they were able to ship us the palette of jeans, which was 20 boxes. It was a godsend because it was just the right colored denim, and the dyes that we'd then got from Craft Colour, they gave us an amazing discount because they wanted to support World Pride. So we were able to get our materials within budget as well. Everything came together. And
so they all wanted to be charitable because they wanted to support the event. But I wonder, as a business, how it would work, you know, because I imagine you'd have to have some kind of contract.
I think that's where
with
you need to sign up with Kit Willow now and talk to her, because she has her own line, repurposing fabrics, and she is a larger brand.
But yeah, it's not about like starting from this big changeover. Yeah. It's just like doing a little small capsule that's injected into the brand or accessories using upcycle apparel. I kind of feel like that's the best thing to go about if you're a big brand or where do you start? Like you start with doing a little small capsule and injecting it in, and then and kind of slowly build, and you know, but it's also rethinking about your packaging and your labeling, and you know, I know for myself, like I eliminate all the pins and all the plastic packaging, like hangers, like I eliminate all that. And I guess as a small brand, like you look at, you start there, and then you just do like a little capsule and you know,
there's lots
see
of
how
retro fitting that these brands have got to do, because they've been around for so long.
If it's like how can I do, or what can I do to help or be a part of it, just I think starting small and like slowly building so it doesn't overwhelm you with, you know, thinking that you can't achieve it. You can, like, it's just kind of sitting down and working out your direction and how it's going to be authentic to you.
Everyone has to have some kind of self, like, you know, compassion that you can't be perfect in every way.
No, absolutely.
And it's not down to you. The world carries on. I think it's fabulous what you do.
Can you talk more about your label and like the textiles that you use?
I like to work with a lot of like natural fibers. So over the last like 10-15 years, I've been like working with suppliers overseas in terms of sourcing dead stock of fabric that I like to work with.
Yeah, cool.
And a lot of the time, I like my print designs that I work with digital printed, even the flat plain colours are digital printed rather than dyed.
Yeah.
They're all digital printed on, but
that uses less water and chemicals.
Yeah, like right? it doesn't have to go through water or anything with all the digital printing. But with the hand painted stuff, it's all made to order. I kind of started doing that during COVID, and you know, I had a friend wear a piece on a show, and it kind of started from there. And then I was
Melissa Leon.
Yeah. It just started from there, and then it just was like, this is an opportunity to grab on this. And so everything's all made to order. I don't produce anything. No, there's no stock sitting waiting.
That's
so when orders come in, then
that's
I
the
make the
that's
piece
the answer,
and then hand paint it. Like educating buyers and the people I work with, they let people know that this is all hand painted. It's one off, and you know how that can work more of a on a bigger scale as well.
And that they can more easily swallow the higher prices, because do most people understand that?
Yeah, they do. They understand. And on my tags is I've got like information saying that they're all one off, not everything's all different. So like if you see an image of one and yours looks a little bit different, that's the, you know, it being a made to order garment.
It's basically art. Wouldn't turn around to the artist and of a piece that you see in a gallery or on the wall or whatever it might be and say, oh, I'm not paying that for that. It's a piece of art. It's made by hand, and people are willing to purchase that because they want to have an individual piece made by Gary the Genie that won't be seen on anyone else.
So they're like commissioning a piece.
Exactly. I feel like when people order online, I still get a few people like, oh, you know, can I have a bit more of this color in this area, or like can I eliminate that color? So there's option for them as well, because it is all made to order. I don't mind. It's just like whatever makes them feel comfy as well, as long as it doesn't take away from what but then that also like helps educate them to be like, oh, you know, I can go down this avenue of waiting for a piece of clothing, because that's also another thing as well, is like educating people to wait, because it would be 4 to 6 week wait for a hand painted piece from start to finish.
You'll
be gagging for it, but also educating them about that rather than ordering something and receiving it within 24 hours. It's like, okay, you know, I'm happy to wait, and I know I'm going to get a good product, and it's you know, and I email customers and let them know along the way, or you know, customers will check in and just making sure it's all good. And
That in itself is educational, right? Because it changes what fashion means.
Exactly, and it gives people that understanding that if you break it down even to that point of making something yourself, you see how long it takes.
Yeah.
My kids are frustrated when they don't get the dress they want made in an instant when they ask for it. So you have to understand that something handmade takes time and that it needs to be appreciated, and that time needs to be paid for.
Sally, can you give me a little rundown of your life?
Oh, wow. Well, as a sustainable designer, I want to be a fashion designer that doesn't make clothes and sell clothes. So for me, it's looking at fashion through a very different lens. I'm trying to problem solve constantly in the way that I can be creative without having to slog my time and effort in making the same thing over and over again. So I'm always striving for more people to hopefully change some perspectives and get them messy, get them in creating, constructing, using existing materials, always trying to problem solve around the waste issues with textiles.
And you do a lot of hand painting and stuff yourself, don't you?
Look, I love making art
and embroidery,
and this is why I love Gary's work so much, because I can see the hand work in it. I gravitate towards anything that has a quirk, something that is beautiful aesthetically. I'm always drawn to it, and always trying to figure out how it's made.
Yeah,
from anything, from a vintage dress through to an artwork, like I'm looking at how something is created and constructed.
And did you go to a fashion school?
I did. I've been to several fashion schools, Joe. I started out at TAFE, and I did my course at East Sydney TAFE, graduated in 99.
Did you,
when were you there?
I Sal graduated in 99, I started in 2000.
Right.
So I did that after high school, yeah. And then I started in commercial fashion, working for Colette Dinigan as her sample cutter.
Right.
Yes. So I know I got lucky because I started interning there,
yeah.
And then I became very close with her head cutter, Jeff Carr, and Jeff Carr taught me the ropes. He'd been in the industry since he was a teenager, and so his hand cutting skills were next level. I got to
real skill, huh?
It was amazing. It was amazing to learn with Jeff, and I was in the sample room cutting samples, and all of those pieces then got transformed into these larger collections. Started off there and then ended up in commercial bridal. I ended up in costume. I've gone through everything you can be as far as making things out of fabric. Had my own business in the early 2000s where I was making themed wedding dresses for people and artworks for my friends who were at COFA and creating wearable art. It wasn't until I had kids though, and the rise of fast fashion had become such a problem that I was enraged and wanted to go and continue my research in sustainable fashion, and looked at the courses available, and UTS had such a great reputation. I delved back in and went to university with two young children to get my Bachelor of Fashion and Textiles, and
that's what I have.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then I did my honours degree where I wanted to find out if I could make a fully sustainable high fashion collection, which I did in creating the Bowerbirds. That was very well received because it was
a stunning collection.
Couture.
Now, put those pictures on. Note for later.
Sure.
Thanks. Yeah, inspired by Bowerbirds and their habit in collecting waste and human waste, and then creating these ritualistic spaces. I wanted to create ritualistic garments from waste, and so inspired by the Bowerbirds, each of my looks was color coordinated based on the fact that Bowerbirds also collect colored waste. And so I wanted to have people be their attention drawn to these garments and then understand that what they were looking at was all repurposed waste, textile waste. Since graduating, I then got asked to work at UTS, so I've been there as a lecturer and doing all my own research on the side as far as creating practical projects. Yeah. All of these practical projects just reinforce my research. So
yes,
I've been very fortunate to work with First Nations Fashion and Design. Mm. I've been paired up with Indigenous artists there and repurposing materials and telling stories as a collaboration, which was an honour and a privilege and just the best, one of the best experiences of my career. But yeah, now working with Gary and World Pride, I'm very excited to say I'm going to be part of the Ethics Centre residency this year, so I'm going to be going into fashion in a whole nother way. So I'd like to actually invite you guys all to be a part of my roundtable discussion, which is going to be about the ethics of fashion.
Amazing.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And that'll be later in the year, so I'm going to throw around ideas of dates and stuff.
Sounds amazing.
But again, it's looking at fashion and seeing so many pockets of where it is untapped or untouched, because we're so used to just a system of fashion. But the layers is we're basically that little cap coming out of the ice shelf in the Arctic. We are at the tip, and there is such a huge, gigantic boulder of a problem underneath.
It's an ironic metaphor, given we're talking about the climate change.
It's a good one. It's a great metaphor.
Because I do see that more influencers like yourselves, knowing that you've come from media and you've come from dressmaking, Gary, with your history of being a fashion designer and your amazing expression of your creative self through fashion, we are all change makers in this. We are pioneers in a space which is different to what is the norm or what people think is fashion. So keep going.
That's a good wrap up too. Thank you so much for talking to us today. We'll see you in a couple of weeks for the workshop, and we will report back to you listeners about how we went at the workshop.
We can't wait to see you there.
Okay, so we're back from the workshop.
Yes.
Thoughts?
Absolutely loved it. I did way too much chit chat and didn't even finish my project, but I like
what we did.
Yeah, so we got these bags. When they did the workshops last year, it was like an all-day thing. Yeah. So people did the cutting up of the jeans and the making different things out of them. This was because it needed to be done faster. They had the bags ready to go, made out of those recycled jeans that Sally was talking about. So we got tote bags and we decorated them, basically. And it was just a very nice, crafty afternoon chatting and sewing sparkles on things. In my case, I just sewed sparkles on because that's my job.
Very prolific with her sparkle sewing.
They had a great soundtrack, by the way.
They do have a great soundtrack, very Mardi Gras-esque.
It was in this lovely little room that's it's called the Center for Creativity, and it's kind of the education center at the Opera House. I was just really enjoying just looking at the harbour, and I was just really enjoying watching all the boats go past while
really,
I was sewing.
Really nice.
Yeah, it was lovely, and like lovely people. It was quite quiet, but I heard they had a lot for the kids' workshops.
So it's a funny one. I don't know why.
I do think the kids' one's so popular that people are always looking for activities for their children, and I don't know. I just feel like it seemed to me a bit like, oh, why don't people plan fun activities for themselves?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it does
make me think. A grown-up arts and crafts workshop is actually quite lovely.
It does make me think about our whole Wear Next challenge and the whole creativity thing. We should all be endeavouring just to live a more creative life.
Yeah, it was fun to just have a little play. It wasn't even like, this is a project I have in mind for myself and I have a vision for how it's turned out. It was literally, I've been handed a bag and I'm decorating it. And so it was really kind of nice to just do something that wasn't work.
Yeah,
and wasn't
like
a pressure to get it right. It was just a fun thing to do.
Yeah. And I spoke to a couple of people there. What I think people were loving is one of them was literally doodling on hers, and she'd like stuck all these stars and then she was just kind of drawing around them, and then she just drew around her hand. And so it was like, I said, it's almost like a 3D version of doodling, because you're kind of embellishing any which way. You're not planning it. It's none of it's planned. It's just, you're just going with the flow.
Yeah.
And that is actually a beautiful, I mean, you know, those coloring books got really, you know, popular a few years ago, but I've never been into them because I feel like that's not creative enough.
Draw your own picture.
Yeah. But for me, like, everyone's different, right? Yeah. But I feel like I love that idea of like creating and just doing stuff with your hands.
Well, and having said that, I do quite like colouring in. We can get a bit like, no, it's not creative enough, but sometimes it doesn't have to be.
I meant for me.
But for a bit of relaxation, you don't need to be creative. You can just...
Yeah, I guess so.
It's just the process.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I'll stick with embellishing tote bags. So thank you, Gary and Sally, for having us along. And
it was so much fun. Mm. And I'm so interested in the way Gary is running his label now,
especially
because my first introduction was 15 years ago at Fashion Week as like an emerging Australian designer. And it was all really good and interesting. And I have to admit, I didn't know that he'd pivoted his label to this custom-made, slow fashion, handmade kind of thing because the work hasn't changed. There's been no drop in quality. There's been no, he doesn't seem high fashion anymore.
Yeah.
It still looks like a high-end, fancy fashion label because it is.
Because it is.
But
it's
just done so differently.
He was ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of kept that integrity.
I was really interested in that process because he has found a way for designers to do it sustainably. And I just would love to see more of them doing it.
Which is basically custom order, bespoke or whatever. I mean,
but
that's not, obviously, it's not for everyone's pocket. It's not for everyone. But
if it's not, sign up to one of his workshops because he's giving the information away for free. That's what I love. You know, he's still in that high fashion world.
Yeah.
And he's catering to those clients, but he's also not gatekeeping his process.
That's right.
Which is really
exactly.
Cool. Yeah.
Less capitalism, more sharing economy. Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, at the time of recording, I've not put together all of that very disjointed audio, so I hope I managed to do it in a way that made sense to you all.
Let's assume you did.
Just know that our normal episodes are a bit more regular.
Yes.
So come back next week and follow us on Instagram at Questioning Fashion Podcast. And that's all from us. Goodbye.
Bye.